Welcome to the 29th Annual Executive War College brought to you by The Dark Report. This year's conference was in beautiful New Orleans, April 30th through May 1st. The title of this presentation is How AI is Reshaping Revenue Cycle Management. The presenter is Jeff Carmichael, Senior Vice President, Engineering and Analytics, SheFin, Inc., San Diego, California.
Good morning. I think we'll go ahead and get started now. So good morning, and thanks for joining us for this session on how AI is reshaping revenue cycle. I'm Jeff Carmichael from XiFin. I head up a number of things we do in data and analytics, as well as engineering, and XiFin's revenue cycle products. I'm here with Sandra Grief-Hees, who is Vice President of Product and Marketing. She's going to share the some of the content related to how AI fits into the overall corporate infrastructures. So a few things we're going to cover today. We'll go through a few foundational elements of analytics, data, automation that really drive the ability to get benefit out of AI in revenue cycle. We'll talk about where people are in the overall maturity cycle for AI, particularly for revenue cycle. We'll look at the path to getting the most out of your AI initiatives, what's essential to making that happen. And then kind of the heart of the conversation will be five specific ways that AI can be directly applied to revenue cycle problems to both reduce the friction in patient experience, but also to reduce overall costs and drive in the revenue cycle process. And we'll close out taking a look at what you need to do to really future-ready your revenue cycle processes for AI and some corporate considerations with respect to introducing AI into your products. So I guess we'll start kind of foundationally looking, what is it we can do with AI really, and how does that apply to revenue cycle? One of the most important things we do with AI is create information. We use it to inform us about predictions and classifications of particular kinds of claims, of particular kinds of payer behaviors. We use it to analyze data and uncover classifications and predict trends. That's ultimately what we want to do with it. That information can be brought back into our analytics, and we can pull that in and understand and comprehend better what we're trying to, what results we're likely to get in revenue cycle. We can also use that information that's generated to accelerate the revenue cycle process. So one way we can do that is by taking that data and understanding what's likely to happen with the claim and having that drive our configuration of revenue cycle to optimize that process. That then accelerates the overall process of driving our revenue cycle. Automation is a third way that that we can utilize AI. So in addition to recognizing a trend or understanding what's likely to happen with a claim, we can take that information and directly act on it within the revenue cycle process. We can automate a response to the condition that it has recognized. Fourth thing we can do is validate. In addition to sort of classifying and recognizing similar kinds of claims or similar kinds of behaviors, AI can help us understand our outliers. What do we have a claim that should have evolved into a payment, but it's shown up as a denial? We can isolate and find those elements, and we can figure out what's different about that or understand how to process those more directly. And then one of the more exciting things we can do with AI now is generate data, generate information. Really, really useful, and we'll talk more about generative AI, in terms of patient interaction, in terms of being able to generate content, letters, other things that are targeted and very specific. So I like to start a discussion about AI with a segmentation between RPA, robotic process automation, and AI. In revenue cycle, we often talk about them together, or you'll hear about them together. RPA really is a process of automating activities that would ordinarily be done by a clerk or somebody with a keyboard. It doesn't have intelligence really built into it. A great example of a reason you might need RPA, if you've got claims coming in from a particular feed where you don't always get the demographic information, somebody has to go into another system, into an EHR, pull that demographic information and place it onto the claim. That's a very manual process. There's no intelligence to it, but we can automate that process through what's called RPA. AI, on the other hand, is intended to drive the intelligence to make a decision. And we can use automation in conjunction with AI to make a decision and act on it, but RPA is really focused on the element of acting on it. And ideally, in your revenue cycle system, you've got rule-based engines or other actions that can be driven by AI modules. Three kinds of AI we typically use in revenue cycle. Machine learning is a real good workhorse. It's the element that allows us to take a look at claims in a broad way, identify trends, understand similar claims, and predict behavior of a particular claim as a result of its similarity to other claims in our historic past. Mathematically based statistical modeling, there's no magic to it, but we can really reprocess all of that historic information and use it to make decisions about claims that are coming in now. Natural language processing is another one we use in the revenue cycle environment. It's more targeted and tailored at understanding textual information so that we can take a look at freeform text responses and turn it into actionable data. So that's what we do with NLP. And then third category, generative AI, large language models. We've heard a lot about these over the last couple of years. Very, very powerful tools in terms of being able to generate content. But we do have a number of challenges in utilizing large language models and generative AI in the revenue cycle process. Some considerations to think through. Like I said, very, very powerful. We can conceive of a lot of ways to use them. They work really, really well as interactive applications for patient engagement, for example. Can be very, very informative, very easy to build something that guides a patient through making a payment. A very powerful kind of application. At this point in time, they can be very expensive. So one thing that you need to think about before going down a large language model path is what is your ultimate cost? What's your long-term ROI in putting it together, as you would with any technology? Maybe more relevant to directly to revenue cycle is accuracy concerns. So anybody who's used ChatGPT, for example, you know it can be really, really good at creating a paragraph about any random subject. And when you read through that paragraph that it's constructed, 80% of it might be just spot on. But more often than not, there's something in there that isn't quite right, isn't quite accurate, doesn't directly reflect what we would do if we were putting it together. So you think about trying to use that in, for example, an appeal letter, and automatically generating an appeal letter. That's an attractive thing we'd like to be able to do with it. Unfortunately, there's a risk that it may come up with information or put content within that message that's just not quite correct. So you got to account for the fact that you're going to need to manage and monitor or put it in a situation where we have tolerance to those kinds of errors. A patient engagement, you know, guiding the patient in a slightly wrong direction towards making a payment is probably less critical than, you know, telling the payer something that's not entirely accurate in appeals process. So we need to be fairly careful about what we target. And the third concern for utilization in RCM is privacy. Everything that goes into a large language model, whether it goes in from a training perspective or it's put in as context for providing the output, has the potential of coming out of that model. Any text that goes in can come out of the model. You think about that, we need to be really careful not to make sure that confidential information and protected health information doesn't get in the model where it can come out of the model at an inappropriate time, or put safeguards around, you know, reviewing and making sure that we understand what's going on in the model. So with those constraints, large language models are very powerful. I think we'll find over the next few years, we'll be able to train them better, and we'll have more confidence that we can trust them for accurate answers, and we can trust them to protect confidential information. Right now, there's some risks there. At this point, I'm going to hand it off to Sandra. She's going to walk us through kind of where companies are at with AI today.
Good morning, everybody. I know there were some people coming in. There's about half a dozen seats up here, and so now is actually a great time because I'm going to ask some people to raise some hands on some answers here if you want to come and grab a seat. A couple of things. Just in my background, I've been at Zeichman for about 6 years. Prior to that, I did strategic planning and market research for a number of high-tech North American firms. And before that, I was in telecom, serving a whole bunch of different industries. And so I'm a bit of a data geek. You'd think, why is a marketer talking about AI? For me, it's really around the evidence that's behind that. And so we'll talk a little bit about that. There's a transition where we've talked a little bit about the foundation of what AI is. And before we get into practical applications, I always find it helpful to give some data back to see where are you in comparison to your peers. And so we've been talking about AI for a little while now. We've done a couple of webinars. One with HFMA and one with the Dark Daily. And so one of the questions that we asked, the Dark Daily one was in September, the HFMA one was in January, was around what's your confidence of AI in a revenue cycle? Do you actually trust it? And so I'm not going to ask you to raise a hand on this one, but I will say that in the middle, everybody is kind of in that I need to be convinced. Sorry. Is it not on? Better? Okay. Perfect. And so it's increased in when we did the poll in September, it was about 70%, and in January it was closer to 75%. We also asked about what their plans were related to using RPA or AI in RCM. And so you'll see that's a little bit across the board. In general, about almost 20% are planning to use it, but another 15% are actually not planning on using it at all, and that was very surprising to us. Okay, so I talked a little bit about my background. One of the things that I've done over a number of years is worked with a number of analyst firms, Gartner, IDC, those types of groups. And one of the things that they are very good at is actually using evidence to understand how technology is being implemented. And those organizations that are getting great returns on those investments, what are they doing differently? And typically, it has absolutely nothing to do with technology. It typically has to do how they are approaching technology from a governance perspective, a culture piece. Are there some sacred cows that they're not getting rid of? That sort of thing. And so Accenture, from an AI perspective, data at AI, actually has a really interesting maturity model. Everybody familiar with what a maturity model is? Okay. So this particular one, they mapped, did research, mapped all industries from an AI continuum. The bottom is around the capabilities, low performance to high performance from an AI foundation capabilities perspective. And the other axis is typically based on value. Usually it's dollars. The higher on the chart they are, the more revenue attributed to AI in this particular model. And so they really looked at an organization's journey, a chart against that maturity model. And their dimensions were around strategy and governance, architecture, development, regulation, ethics, and user support. So you'll see that there's a lot in the AI experimenters kind of bucket, very few in the achievers, so getting high return, about 30% of the revenue from an AI, and really have figured out the capabilities piece in the top right. This is all industries, all company sizes, all regions. How does healthcare fare? Before I give you that answer, it doesn't matter how many different maturity models they've seen and what technology is being implemented, just by the nature of healthcare, they are always the laggards. It just is, right? So how far back? So we're at 3% in the achievers, top right box, versus the other. What's interesting, though, is, and not surprising based on how much AI there is in the clinical space, is there's a lot more experimenters in the healthcare space in the bottom left. And so that is actually good in terms of more in the funnel, so to speak. The question is, how fast can we get up and to the right? One of the things that we can consider is, as you're thinking about getting into AI, specifically for RevCycle, there's always, buy, partner, build type of situation. There is scale in terms of deciding to do it in a different way that that should be considered. And because of the complexity related to regulatory and that sort of thing, there's also an advent from that perspective that weighs in. Okay. So then the question becomes, where am I on that maturity scale? So I think there is a RCM best practice maturity model under development. I was actually talking to somebody at HIMSS about it. I haven't seen it. It hasn't been published yet. But I will say that, based on what we're seeing through the many customers that we have, is there's different people that are in different buckets, as you would expect. And so we're finding a lot of people still have very siloed data. And it's siloed in that they just use it for RevCycle. They don't necessarily use the RevCycle data to drive decisions in other parts of the business. Others are, they're understanding and have gotten some buy-in that there's a little bit more value to that data and, moving it to an AI perspective. And this concept of silo is not just from a data perspective, but it's very specifically the AI, where they're doing an AI project for one problem versus looking at AI, can that particular model solve multiple problems? So you'll see that, as you go to the right, it gets a little bit more mature. And so the middle one is really around building momentum around that model and extending it to other groups so that they can move towards more self-service area. They're really viewing AI in their organization as a differentiator or a way to drive profitability. And then on the far right, it's data and AI is really their currency. And in some cases, could be more valuable than what they actually do every day. And so that's an important piece. The other piece that we have kind of looked at is we talk about these data silos, and very much, most people are in the analytics area. And then we talk a little bit of we're seeing a lot of RPA-related automation. But we're also seeing people take data out of their RCM cycle, applying AI, and then pumping it back in. What we're finding is that doesn't allow the reuse of the AI. And so embedded AI is a little bit better from a RevCycle perspective. So ultimately, the success hinges on the data and the underlying structure. There's a lot of tech out there that knows everything there is about AI, but they know nothing about RevCycle data. And so you will end up spinning some cycles in that space. We certainly have seen that or have had to do some cleanup in a couple of different places. Okay, and one last slide before I hand it back to who you actually want to hear about from is Jeff, is I'm going to just poke a little bit of fun in my own profession, and that is the marketing teams at payers create more chaos in your RevCycle than you ever imagined. And so we would love to have a logo on our insurance cards, but those logos, one, are hard to translate, requires a different type of technology, and Jeff will speak to that. But the other piece is they don't actually say what the payer name is, or it's a partial payer, or it doesn't have a location. And all of that stuff is actually required, as you know, to process that claim and get it reimbursed. And so with that, I'll hand it over to Jeff.
Thanks, Sandra. Yeah, these cards are a real challenge. And we'll talk a little bit about it as we move forward. My favorite parts is we encode information in a little suitcase, a little icon down there. But it's a blue card, really important to know when you're looking for eligibility for a patient. On the other hand, really hard to decipher and not something patients are going to easily embrace. Okay, so when it comes to AI, we'll take a look at a few examples here. RCM data is complicated,
right? If you think about the life cycle of a claim, from the time it comes in the door, the number of changes it goes through in terms of data evolution just in getting cleaned up and ready to submit, it gets submitted to a primary payer. Hopefully we get the right one. If we don't, we got a coordinated benefits problem that comes back, it goes to another primary. We have primary adjudication. Maybe we get a denial. Maybe we do an appeal. Secondary, tertiary adjudications. We've got the full patient collection cycle. Lots of data associated with a single claim running through the system. For us to do good predictions and predict good outcomes and take action on claims early in the process, we really want to have all of that information and collect all of that information in a very consistent structured fashion so that an AI engine can look at it and know that, hey, you know, this claim is likely to go through a similar series that a previous claim went through. If we don't have good, accurate data and we don't collect all of the data through all of those cycles in a consistent fashion, AI is not going to come up with good decisions or good predictions. Those predictions will lead to bad decisions in the workflow, and the AI is not very effective. So all of it starts with great data capture in your revenue cycle system and making that available to algorithms to train on. We'll walk through a few of these. This is a picture of a typical revenue cycle and many of the different processes that we go through from patient to zero balance. We've kind of organized it here where if a claim comes in with all the necessary data and we have all the necessary automations put in place, claim can come in, claim can go out, nobody has to touch it. And that's our goal, right? The less touches, less we spend on collection, the better off we are. But in any one of these places, there could be fallout. We find an error, we have missing data, we have a denial. Somebody's going to have to take a look at it. And these are really the places where initially we want to apply AI to try to eliminate human intervention and human interaction in a place where we don't need it. So I've identified five examples here. There are many, many, many more. But these are a few good examples that touch on the front end of the process where maybe we need to do some data collection from patients or from physicians early in the process. And then some that are in the back end of the process where we're trying to automate decisions in revenue cycle and or correct data and get data to the right payers and take the right actions based on payer responses. So we'll go through these five examples, starting with capturing third-party insurance information. So here's a typical form. So unfortunately, as laboratories, we don't always have the patient in front of us at a point in time when we can collect this information. Sometimes we have to reach back out to the patient to collect it, and sometimes that's the easiest way for us to get it. If you're lucky, you've got a portal you can direct the patient to. They can enter it. But look what we typically ask a patient to enter, right? It's a ton of information that's got to come off of that card for us to be able to process it effectively and move it on. It's not a process a patient wants to go through. If you don't have a portal, it's a process that you've got somebody in a call center trying to walk a patient through, right? Expensive call, long expensive call. Ideally, what we'd like to do, and what we can do with AI, is take a picture of that card, right? We can run it through OCR. We can extract the elements of it. We can apply some NLP to it, that natural language processing, to understand the differences between cards. They call it a member ID. They call it a subscriber ID. Is it a number? How all those things fit together. So we can recognize the right elements off of that card and directly populate the form on behalf of the patient. Beyond that, then, we can do an eligibility check, eligibility verify that, and send back to the patient, hey, we found this insurance. Can you confirm this is the right stuff? That's the ideal workflow, all accomplishable with easy technology. OCR is readily available to do this. And some NLP and some machine learning gets us to that result.
Now, we can't always count on a patient being able to or wanting to take a picture of their insurance card. Not everybody's going to do it. My mom probably would not go through that process. But we can utilize that same AI to capture as little information as we absolutely need in order to get that eligibility request accomplished so we can collect the rest of the information through eligibility. And what we've seen with AI approaches is if we can get an idea of what the major payer is and get a clean subscriber ID, we can usually get to an eligibility response without any further interaction. If we do need to collect a little bit more data to get to where we need, sometimes we'll need to, if it's a Medicaid, we'll need to pick up state information as well. That's a process that AI can guide the patient through, and we're collecting as little information as we need in order to get to the result that we want, rather than presenting them with a giant form. Now, once we get that eligibility verification, we're not entirely done from a revenue cycle perspective. We need to tie that result to the payer plan within your system that implements the rules for your contract or that implements the rules for your non-contracted expectation. And those are unique in every revenue cycle environment and system. So that mapping is unique in every environment. Another place where machine learning can come in, we can take a look at your claims historically, where a particular payer plan group coming back from eligibility winds up in your contract base. And it can maintain and drive that automated mapping directly to the payer within your environment. Okay, so continuing on the front end, once we've got, assuming this is the front end of the process, we've collected this from the patient, we may want to do a patient out-of-pocket estimate following up on that. I mean, good news, there's a few things you need for an estimate. One of them is an understanding of the pricing for the procedures that are going to be performed. We're in a revenue cycle system. We should have a good idea of what this is going to price out at now that we've identified the payer, right, and the appropriate plan associated in the system. Given that in our eligibility response, which we should be able to get copay, coinsurance, and remaining deductible information from, we can calculate a patient out-of-pocket estimate reasonably well for most services. There are definitely more and more services now in the diagnostic arena where the eligibility responses we get at a service type level, so whether it's a laboratory service type, not every CPT code has the same rules with respect to how deductibles work, coinsurance and copay work associated with those. Most of your clinical lab does, but more and more procedures we're seeing with different kinds of carve-outs and different kind of handling at a procedure code level. And we don't get procedure code responses from very many payers in very many situations. So for those kinds of procedures, we can go back to utilization of machine learning to go into our history and capture for those particular payers, plans, groups, what is typically copay and coinsurance? Does it exist, and how much is it? And we can get a more accurate answer for those kinds of procedures utilizing AI. We'll talk about, as well, for your non-contracted payers, maybe you don't have a good understanding of what the payer is going to allow, and we'll talk about how AI can help with that in the next slide. Key to doing the estimate. And a very similar model to the model that we need to do to collect information about coinsurance and copay can also help us understand whether there are prior authorization requirements associated with the particular testing for that particular payer plan, and or whether there are other limited coverage policies that may be in play that we don't have configured in our revenue cycle system already. So that's always a risk when you give a patient estimation. Eligibility is not going to tell you that there's limited coverage. It's not going to tell you whether there's prior authorization requirements, but AI can. And we can flag that up front, and we can give that information to the patient in an appropriate way. Okay, so that covers a couple of things here in the front end that we want to do. In the back end,
We're going to utilize AI a little bit more to drive either configuration within our revenue cycle system and automate some of that file maintenance that that we either don't want to do or is too expensive for us to do on a regular basis. Or we can use it to actually directly make decisions within our workflow. And we'll take a look at both of those kinds of examples. We talked about understanding expect pricing, what a payer is going to allow for a particular procedure for that particular payer and plan. For your contracted payers, you probably have a good interface from your contracting team that feeds your revenue cycle this information, keeps your rates updated, and you have a really good idea of what you expect to be allowed from the payer. You do sometimes see discrepancies. We still want to report on that because you want to make sure the payer is paying what they're supposed to, but we've got good data coming in usually for that. For your non-contracted payers, it's a little bit more challenging to keep up with. You may know what you've typically seen, and you may have some kind of process to continue to maintain those, or you may just set them at something reasonable, right, and deal with those discrepancies on the financial reporting side of life. We'd like to be more accurate, as we've seen in generating a patient estimation. We need to be more accurate, but with as many different payer plans as we see, and the frequency with which they change, it's a daunting task to keep up with it. And this is a place where AI can really help by data mining, taking a look at your historic data, running an AI process across that data on a regular basis to produce fee schedules for those non-contracted payers. Great way to apply AI to eliminate a lot of manual work and make your revenue cycle more accurate. Okay, a couple more a little further on the back end. Payer responses. Most of our payer responses now, thanks to 5010, have been standardized in a way that allow us to take action on the results that we get. 835s, in general, the reason codes that come back on 835s, very reliable for understanding what happened with the claim and driving next actions, automated next actions, whether we're flipping it to a different payer, whether we're driving it through an appeal process, all that can be automated on those kinds of codes. One of the areas that's a little bit less standardized because the requirements are less strict is in claim status responses. In particular, missing information or incomplete information, A321 claim status responses indicating claims were rejected. We know it was rejected. We know it was rejected for missing or incorrect information. We may have an entity code that tells us what that information was, but if you want to know why it was rejected and understand what the problem with the data was, you have to go into a text field within the 277 response called an STC12. Every payer, every plan has a different kind of message for the same kind of problem, right? Non-standard freeform text. Perfect application for natural language processing associated with machine learning to connect the dots, to recognize, hey, when we have a particular kind of problem, this is the message that's going to show up. Now I can drive an action on it because I know not only what field had the problem, but what the problem was. And I can put it in the right queue for somebody to work if it has to be worked manually, or if it's something I can automate, I can go do some data mining and correct the data, or I can send it to a portal to collect the data. I can automate that action rather than having somebody have to pull up that particular rejection to work. Okay, and the fifth thing that we'll talk through is actually maybe the most exciting with respect to how it can offset costs within revenue cycle is workflow management. So there are going to be those things that fall out of the process. There are going to be those things that have to go to a work queue someplace for somebody to take a look at and do something with. Our goal here is to make that as effective and as efficient as possible. And one of the first things we want to do is make sure that we're working on the highest value, most collectible claims first, right? We want to work all of our problems, but let's make sure we prioritize the things that actually are likely to be collected, and that have a higher dollar value. Another perfect application for machine learning: we can take a look at our historical adjudication for similar claims, claims for same or similar payer. You look at payer procedure code, you look at diagnosis, you put all this stuff together into a machine learning model, and it will come back with an understanding of what the likelihood that this particular claim is going to ultimately be paid. Put that together with how much the claim is likely worth, timely filing limits, and we can build a prioritized list of the work that we need to accomplish within the clerical teams in the revenue cycle business. That's a great start. We'd also like to make sure that we get those particular work items into the hands of the people who are most capable of dealing with it. And in a big revenue cycle system, you may have several different teams that are focused on several different kinds of activities. And you may have a manager who's pushing lists of things to different people, who's running reports on a daily basis and carving out work for different groups and different individuals to do. Well, we can utilize AI to automate that process as well, to take a look again at our historical adjudication, which teams are most successful at getting which kinds of claims paid, and direct those prioritized lists of claims to that team, or to the specific individual within the team or within the overall company that's most successful at getting those kind of claims paid. Now, obviously, there are other factors. We need to understand how busy they are, how much is in their queue, right? Whether they're on vacation, those kinds of things need to be taken into account. But through AI, we can get the most collectible things in the hands of the best collectors very efficiently. So, putting that all together, I think, Sandra talked specifically about RPM expertise, and there's no doubt that that's one of the most important factors in bringing AI into your revenue cycle environment. Really understanding the data, really understanding how it's collected is something that a revenue cycle expert needs. Hard to train a data scientist to understand that, but if you can get a revenue cycle expert together with a data scientist, lots of things you can do to make the, to get these kinds of results and other things done. Modular and interoperable RCM infrastructure. It's great to have AI predictions. We could predict that a claim is likely to be paid. We could predict that this particular team is the best at working at it, but if we still have to run a report to carve those claims out and send them over to the team, if we can't integrate that into the revenue cycle process and get that automation done the way we want, you're losing a lot of efficiency and effectiveness that the AI could provide. We talked about data is key. The data model, clean data throughout the revenue cycle environment that's organized in a fashion that AI can adopt is really critical. Automation within the revenue cycle system, as Sandra pointed out, much more efficient if you can embed that AI into the automation of the revenue cycle system than if you have to take it outside, put it into an RPA environment. You got to extract all your data. You got to do the AI on the outside. You got to keep that data pipeline coming in. And then you've got an expensive RPA process that's going to have to pull information and take action within your revenue cycle system. Much better to have that embedded. Analytics continues to be a key. Your revenue cycle experts are going to find ways that AI can help with the process if they can look at the data holistically and do some analysis, can take a look at those outliers we talked about and understand why they're different from the rest of the community, work with your data scientists to understand how to adopt models so that the right things go into the right buckets. And then AI expertise is critical. I will say RCM expertise, having done this many times, the RCM expertise far outweighs the need for a PhD in artificial intelligence. The artificial intelligence tools that we have today can be put in the hands of people who understand data and people who understand revenue cycle in a way that's very, very effective to drive results. And with that, I'll hand it back over to Sandra, who's going to talk through our AI transparency and some other considerations.
Thank you. All right. So with the AI chatter, you've probably heard the concept of, are there guardrails? You know, how do we stay within those guardrails? And so that's even more important in healthcare. And so there's about 10 areas where we talk about guardrails in the form of transparency. It's visibility into those pieces. So data, privacy, and security is obviously is an obvious one. There is some transparency in the algorithm in terms of how it operates that you should be looking for, trying to mitigate bias and accuracy and reliability. It is a program. It continues to live. It's not like you can just let it go, right? You need to manage that. And so it requires oversight and intervention in some cases. Sometimes there's retraining involved in terms of those models. Certainly there needs to be transparency in terms of AI working within regulatory and payer compliance guardrails. Interoperability and integration. The interoperability, if you think from a maturity model perspective, is the extension into other systems, into other groups, and sometimes even into other organizations, when you just think about AI, not necessarily from an RCM perspective, but beyond. Making sure that there's a patient-centric approach. This is by far the best way to remove friction from the patient experience that I've seen in many years. And so that is one of those things that I am very passionate about. There's always ethical considerations that you need to consider, and continuous learning and improvement from within the team. So those are kind of the areas where if you're thinking about dabbling in this or you're already in and it's not going the way you want, make sure that you think about all those 10 areas and you have a way to actually work through those 10 areas. The last slide is really around, do you have the right skill sets in your organization? And so based on what we've seen, these are 8 areas where we would be looking in terms of making sure you can bolster up your skill set within your teams, either directly in your teams or through partnerships or some of your vendors. So understanding healthcare data models and the metrics specific to financial and operational workflow. By the way, there is a way to measure AI, and it's not just what it returns, but analytics is actually a great way. You can do a pre and kind of post analytical view. Scoping out and delivering business critical metrics. So sometimes, especially in rev cycle, I see that they only look at it from a rev cycle perspective, but yet the business side of that, you could actually use that from a profitability perspective to get a better understanding, make different decisions in the organization. Getting and developing customized, reusable data models and having a skill set that has a track record of working with combined clinical and financial because that is so important from an rev cycle perspective. The other piece is, you may have some expertise in AI and they're really lean into one type of model. Being able to use all the different types of models that Jeff spoke to is really important because some models are much more expensive or not cost effective, and there's actually a better way of approaching it. Ability to identify the most appropriate kind of useful analytics is an important skill set. And then a flexible model in terms of roster of experience, being able to bring different experts in at different parts of the process so you make the most of the AI that you have across the different cycles. And then supplementing those expertise, the skill set that you have internally through partners or different types of vendors or other ways that people use that. And so with that, I believe we got 4 or 5 minutes and have enough time for questions. And so I will open it up to questions if there are any. Yes?
So question for the gentleman. The slide that you had in regards to the revenue cycle management process and where AI is going to fit into that, do you have any estimates on what timeline to the lab receiving the reimbursement that the AI will bring an advantage to? Is it going to speed up us receiving reimbursement? If so, do you have an estimate of that timeline for that? And then the second question is, for those steps where AI is, you know, into that process, do you have a manual override built into each of those processes? So if AI is getting something wrong, whether it's one time or 10 times, is there going to be manual overrides so that a person can go in there, fix the issue for the patient or for the, you know, the lab that's submitting it, and it not become a big device?
Yeah, no, those are both great questions. To the first question, I mean, a lot of it has to do with what your current timelines look like, right, obviously, and where you capture the issue. But, you know, I you know, kind of turning the question around, I mean, how much faster would you collect if you got the the manual processes to the right person, you know, day one, as opposed to it sitting in a queue or being divided up, or how much faster would that work? Or what is your typical delay if you have missing patient information, right? Don't have good patient information up front, right? So ultimately, you know, we're trying to reduce that to those kinds of delays to zero. So put that into your equation, and I think you can get your answer. With respect to overrides, yeah, for sure. In all of the environments, in fact, as you saw with the expect price pieces, let me take a step back. I'm a big believer that any rules that you have in place in revenue cycle today should stay. They don't need to be replaced with AI, because there are many places where rules are just better, right? AI is great in taking a look at your historic data and say what typically happened. That doesn't mean that's what's supposed to happen. And so something like pricing an accession, right? You're going to want rules that drive how you price, how you drive that put that pricing together. You may want to collect from the data what you expect to be reimbursed, right, and get that into your system, but you're not going to use that historic data to drive your pricing. And so everywhere we plug these, we have a set of rules around them that guide and manage it. And for sure, those rules should either utilize the AI path or not utilize the AI path, depending upon whether that's been successful for you or not.
I think we have time for one more question, if there are any. Yep.
So you talked a lot about, like, embedding AI workflows in the actual system versus using RPA. We use a lot of RPA, taking the extracts of a XIFIN and then doing manual processes through RPA. How can we start working with XIFIN to see if those processes are able to be pushed into the RPA?
Yeah, love to work with you on that. Yeah, just get a hold of your CSM, and we'll start the conversation. Because, yeah, we'd rather have you doing it. If we can do it within the system, we'd rather have you doing it.
Any other ones?
What was the mature app in our application of AI in RevCycle today?
I mean, as far as our experience goes, we've been using it for expect pricing evaluation for many, many years. So that's very mature, and it's a really good application, I think. And it's useful, but maybe not as powerful as some of the ones in patient engagement, which we're finding to be really useful too.
The feedback from some of our customers is really around, as well, the exception processing and prioritizing that, because it's so manual right now, and getting it to the right person. So that's one of the reasons why we're focusing in that area. Any others? All right. Thank you so much. Enjoy the conference.
Thank you.
This concludes the presentation. Please visit the Executive War College website for details on the 2025 event.